Hi everyone, welcome to Get Real Parental Coaching. You're listening to your host Sandra True, and today we've got Kieran Anders from Dads Matters, and we're going to be talking to him about his journey as a parent and how Dads Matters was formed and the reasons why he and his team collaborated together to form Dads Matters. So we're going to get into all of that. So let's read out his bio first and then we'll welcome him on. So it's Kieran Anders aims to help dads have successful relationships with their families and to support dads with anxiety, stress, and mental health issues. We hope to get dads engaged with services that have traditionally been targeted at mums and to train and support volunteer dads to work with us. We work directly with services that support dads, families, and especially babies to increase engagement and knowledge across the sector. We want to make sure dads know how important they are, how to access support when they need it, and why it's essential for babies' development. So welcome, Kieran. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. That sounded very formal, didn't it? I'm okay with that. That's pretty much the aim, definitely. Yeah, no, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Yeah. I'm good. Excited. So tell us first about how it was for you as a parent, because you have two girls, I believe.
Yeah, I've got two girls. One's 22. She lives in Manchester. She's got her own little flat. She's doing all right. And the other one's 15, going through her GCSEs at the moment. When I first became a dad, I actually, we lost a daughter just before my eldest was born, Emma, who died from group B strep. So she was born full term but died a few minutes later. It was quite traumatic circumstances. We hadn't really prepared for being parents or anything like that, so it was a massive that particular experience then impacted having our other two children. About 18 months later we had our eldest, Dharma, who when she was born the labour and everything was kind of, it was okay. I wouldn't say run of the mill. We were induced and we were in the hospital for a bit before contraction started, but for me, because of the group B strep element, my partner had to have an IV drip with antibiotics in it. She was really needle phobic, and that just created a lot of trauma for me because I was experiencing and witnessing this thing happening without really having a lot of control or say or even interest in how I was coping with it. It really set the tone, I think, in those early days, and it really affected our relationship after Dharma was born for a long time. We managed to get back on an even keel. We had Erin 7 years later, and it felt a lot different for me in that I felt like a grown up. I was 20, 21 when we had Dharma, and at 27 I felt like I had more say. I felt more empowered to speak to people. I was working in early years in children's centres at the time, and I felt more like I could speak to midwives to ask questions, to find out what was happening, to find out what was best for me to do to support my partner. I felt that was my motivation, really. But again, the witnessing what was happening, the need for the IV drip, but the needle phobia meaning it didn't happen, my partner and babies having to stay in hospital, it was really traumatic. And looking back now, I see that that was an issue for me in those early years of my children being born that I didn't deal with in the way that I could have done. I was really lucky. I had really supportive parents. I had friends and particularly an uncle who supported me through quite a lot of it. And it felt, I didn't discuss it with anyone. I didn't talk to anybody about what was happening, but I had people around me so that when I was feeling down or was feeling like I was struggling, I had people there to help me practically, which is what I felt I needed. If I could go back and change it, I probably would try to acknowledge the fact that it was traumatic during that labour, because I never did. And it probably is only in the last 3 or 4 years that I've talked about that trauma being something that impacted me. But my motivating factor through all of that was to make sure my partner was okay, because I felt that her trauma was more than mine, and I wanted to make sure she was okay and she was coping okay and she was managing her well-being okay, so that the children had that input from mum. But I know that I had to be okay to do that, and I probably wasn't at some point. But since then, parenting I don't like to say it's been a doddle, but I felt quite natural at it. I don't react to things. I don't feel stressed about things that happen in a parenting way. I'm supportive. I'm approachable. There's always boundaries, but I think I do. I'm a responsive parent. So I don't tell them not to do something unless there's a very specific reason for them not to do it. Not just because it's annoying me. I'll say, that's really annoying, I'd like you to stop, but I won't tell them they have to because I don't like it. I'll take myself out of the room if they're making too much noise and it's annoying me. I'll move myself. It's not, I'm the grown up, you know. So I felt like that in the early days, and now that they're grown up, they both come to me, both talk to me about the problems. We have very open relationship. I'm pretty sure that I did the conversations around sex and relationships with both of them as well. I remember the most traumatic conversation I ever had with my eldest was when Zane left One Direction, and she was absolutely mortified about the fact that he was leaving her group. But we had conversations about periods and sex and boys and girls and all this stuff that goes on and never batted an eyelid. But as soon as a boy was leaving a band, the rule went out the window.
Just taking you back a little bit then, Kieran. So when you were saying that you had to sort of be strong for your wife going through everything that she went through, and you were going through that as well, because obviously you're together. So how did you cope? What were you feeling on a day-to-day basis? I know you're saying you had your family around you and you did have support, and you're fortunate to have that, because not everybody has that. They don't get on with their family, and you know, their family unit is them, the girlfriend or the wife or and a baby, and that's all they've got. So how would you cope with not that much support around you back then?
Well, when it all felt very separate, everything was in little separate boxes to deal with. And so when I was with my girlfriend then, we wouldn't talk about the loss, really. I knew that she talked to her parents about it. I talked a little bit to my parents and again, an uncle that was particularly helpful. I didn't really discuss it anywhere. I was at uni at the time. I didn't complete my uni course with exams happening around the time that it happened. And I went to uni and completely distracted myself from the fact that I should be thinking about it. And whenever I thought about it, it wasn't about me. It was always about my partner being okay. Did she need anything from me? Was there anything that I could do for her? But because we didn't talk about the loss, everything that I wanted to do was practical, not emotional, not supportive. It was very, it's that man way of doing things. And in the very early days, I coped by going out and getting drunk, going dancing, going clubbing. And my personality changed because I used to be not conservative. I was always quite outgoing, but I suddenly became the center of attention, whatever I did. And it really helped me be distracted, to be that person. And I was like that for a number of years. And I think that was one of the reasons that our relationship in those early days broke down. And three years after Dan was born, we kind of got back together and we moved in together and we had Erin, and then we got married and everything kind of worked out. And we're not together now, but we're absolutely, you know, on really good terms. It's been a great relationship over 20 years. But those first years, I feel I was running away from dealing with what I was having to deal with. And I didn't do until I had that time on my own. And it was my dad pointing out to me, you know, you're going out every week, three, four nights a week, spending all your spare money on going out, drinking, and not really looking after yourself. We need to think about what we can do to support you. So you still need to do those things. You still need that outlet, but let's find other outlets and other things that we can add into the mix to help. And at that point, I went and got some counselling, just talking therapy, nice and simple. And one of the best things I did was join a parental advisory board on a local Sure Start Centre team. And it was really new then, and I was the only one that would talk about being a dad in the way that they needed. And it led me down the path of becoming like community development officers for play workers, for early years workers, and then supporting the programme management for children's centres. Really gave me a massive insight, not into what dads needed from those services, because I knew that because I was a dad, but what those services thought dads needed and didn't really get right. My coping mechanisms were not healthy to start with, but luckily I had that support around me to point that out, and I figured it out, and it took me a couple of years. But as soon as I'd figured it out, everything fell in place again, and suddenly being a dad was always the most important thing. But because we weren't together, I wasn't a dad 100% of the time. It was sporadic, if you like. It might have only been a couple of times a week. And when I was a dad, I was absolutely engaged and responsive and in tune with my baby, and I knew what I was doing. I never felt that being a dad wasn't possible or was difficult. It was the stuff around it that I didn't realise impacted my ability to be a good dad.
Do you know what? I'm loving the fact that you've got a really good relationship with your girls, and the fact that you've managed to keep yourself open to them, because it's unusual for daughters to go to dads and talk about anything, you know, because normally you get the dad like, I don't want you to do this and I don't want you to do that type of thing, or at least they think that's what they're going to say. So how do you manage to gain that relationship with your daughters, especially being open, approachable? I mean, I can imagine other dads listening to this and like, wow, how is he managing to do that? Because they just, all dads want to just lock up their daughters, don't they, really?
You know, it's all about feeling awkward and acknowledging that it's okay to feel awkward. And it's also about being informed about the things that they want to talk about, knowing about periods, knowing about a relationship, knowing about sexuality, knowing about gender issues, knowing about the challenges they're going to face because they're girls. If you can be informed about those, then nothing that they say can shock you. And if they can't shock you, then they're going to be a bit shocked when you have a really responsive, educated reply. And the other thing that feels sometimes uncomfortable for men to do is to not give advice, and that doesn't come naturally. As men, when we say to our mate, oh, I've got this problem with my satellite dish, the WhatsApp group is, well, you need a ladder and you need this screwdriver and you need this particular tool to do this with it, and that's how we face problems in life. We offer advice, we offer solutions, but actually sometimes my girls particularly will come to me with, I've got this problem, and they just want to sit with it, and they want to talk it through. They want me to hear it, reflect it back to them, understand what they're going through, and empathize with it without saying, you need to do this. But sometimes they also need that practical advice, and I'll say to them at the beginning of a conversation, is this something where you want me to give you practical advice, or are we just going to hug and talk and listen? And they know now that they can do both with me, and there's no kind of issue with it. But yeah, not telling them how to fix it is important. And that doesn't just go for daughters, that also goes for partners. Sometimes there's a lot of conflict because dads want to fix things and mums don't want them fixed. And mums want to sit with things and dads don't want to sit with it, they want to fix it. And there's a bit of conflict that we can, if we understand that, we can work it out.
That's lovely. I'm loving that advice there. If no one don't take that away from them, then I don't know what they're going to be talking about. So let's move on to Dads Matters. How did that all come about?
Well, in Great Manchester, an area called Tameside, there's been an early attachment service for a long time, 15 years or so. And that's a service within CAMHS, which is in the NHS, which is all based on supporting babies' early attachment with caregivers. And they support all parents, mums, dads, co-parents, intended parents, adoptive parents, foster parents, anybody who has care of an under two, from conception to the age of two. And in Tameside, they built a pathway of support for those parents, which included perinatal mental health. So that primarily when we say that, we think about mums, but it also includes dads. It also included midwifery and health visiting and peer support through an organisation called Homestart, which is where Dad Matters comes from, breastfeeding support, and lots of other kind of agencies, including social care and mothers. So that pathway was really, really good at engaging with mums and that attachment that babies needed, supporting mums with it. And they worked with dads, but they found that the peer support element of it wasn't really reaching dads in the way that they wanted to. And this happens a lot in a lot of organisations. They go, oh, we're not seeing any dads, our numbers are really low, let's do something to reach dads. And in the past, when I worked for SureStart and I've worked for youth services, what we would do is we would put on a sports celebration day or a sports taster day or a messy play or a bacon butty on a Saturday morning for a breakfast club. And we'd get dads in and it'd boost the numbers and it was great. And these dads that came really got something from it. But what I always knew was that if that wasn't on, those dads would be doing something with their children that would be just as impactful, because those dads were already engaged with their children. They didn't need to know to be engaged. They were. That's why they came. So when Homestart got an innovation grant from the Health Foundation to work with the Early Attachment Service in Tameside and the Anna Freud Centre, who do a lot of attachment and support work, they got some money and wanted to get to recruit a man to deliver the parent infant mental health work or the attachment work for dad. And they interviewed me and I told them that their plan probably wasn't going to work in the way they thought, and they had an opportunity to do something in a much broader sense. And there was a few key elements that they needed to put in place first before those referrals and one-to-one support could work. And they really appreciated that, and they hired me. At the time, I was a secondary school teacher, and I love my job teaching. I was looking to get full-time curriculum teaching in health and social care at the time, but this job came up and I moved into it. That was 5 years ago. It was our birthday in May this year. And after the first year, we scaled the project to cover the whole of Greater Manchester, which is 10 towns, including Manchester City Centre, Salford City Centre, and eight other large boroughs. We have around 44,000 births a year, I think, on the last count, which is a massive population. And the premise is that we have three key principles that we want dads to know about: attachment and bonding, mental health for both mum and dad, and accessing services that they probably wouldn't access usually. And if we can work on those three things with dads in various different ways, we can support babies' well-being, babies' best start to life by helping dads to understand that as well. And that's because those three things, dads don't get the opportunity to find out about, they don't necessarily get the support to find out about it, and they're not engaged with the services where mums get the support from. So we need to make sure that it's part of the journey. But we do that in a layered way, so there has to be some things in place so that we can reach those dads. We know that some dads will really struggle and will get a referral from a service like the attachment service or health visiting, that's great. We can take that referral and work with that dad in a one-to-one way. But some dads really need some scaffolding so that referral can happen. So we have a universal element to what we do, which is all around engagement. So we do antenatal engagement by outreach. So we go to antenatal clinics, we sit in the clinic, or we stand outside during COVID, tapping on car windows where dads have been waiting for outside for appointments. We could see 40 dads in an hour at some of those outreach sessions. We also recruit volunteers to help do more outreach sessions to increase that capacity of dads that we're reaching. And we speak to dads there about what we do and what's on offer and what the services are. But the main reason that we speak to them is about the baby, to bring the baby into the conversation, to start that relationship with the dad early, find out about what music they're going to share with the baby, what football team baby might support, which is a great question in Greater Manchester. There's lots and lots of questions you can ask that really get dad thinking about baby within their family structure.
So if I can just cut you there, can we just talk about the attachment attachment in terms of, can we just go a little bit deeper into attachment just for those who's listening, and they may think attachment is, they may have a different concept of attachment when you talk about attachment. So if we can just expand on that bit a little bit more.
Yeah, of course. So we talk about attachment and bonding. Bonding is what a parent does to a baby or with a baby. We bond with other people. It's all about relationships. It's all about trust. But attachment is a very specific thing that a baby does to a caregiver. And it's a survival, evolutionarily, babies have evolved to survive by being attached to a grown-up because they need that care. And what babies are looking for is responsiveness. They need to feel safe. And they do that in a number of different ways. In the very early days, a baby that could be newborn will look for a face. They'll look for recognition on the face. They look for mirroring, where the grown-up understands what they're feeling, even though the baby doesn't necessarily understand it yet because they can't label it. So things like when a newborn's looking at dad or mum and baby's crying, the parent isn't an ultimately mega happy face on them. We pull a sad face. The baby understands that we understand what they're feeling. And then we change our face to help the baby to regulate their emotions. And that's the biggest part of attachment, is baby's emotions are overwhelming. They're only tiny. They don't have labels for any of these emotions, but they still feel them in the way that we do. And so what a caregiver does is they take those emotions for the baby, they hold them or contain them for a while so the baby can regulate, and it helps babies to feel safe. And when they feel safe, they're more able to explore the world, to develop their own sense of self, sense of empathy, sense of other people, and then move on and develop in a way that's productive for them and it's successful in the future. So attachment is the basis of everything that we do at Dad Matters. We want babies to feel safe. We want dads to understand how to help babies to feel safe. And we want to get rid of those myths around you shouldn't pick your baby up too often, or you'll spoil your baby if you hug them all the time. All of those myths that mean babies are not getting what they need to feel safe can really, really impact on a baby's development. And dads don't get the opportunity to find that out. Mums will speak to midwives and health visitors and baby groups and postnatal depression groups and online groups, and dads will speak to their mates in the pub about the football and never mention the baby. And that's, it's just the way that life is. So we want to make sure that dads can get that information. So we do it universally as often as possible, and we can do it in a very tailored way for those dads that are really struggling with it.
I do love your Sure Start outreach program, the way, as you said, you're knocking on car doors and stuff. If that's the only way you can reach out to dads, then that's what you have to do. I'm absolutely really loving that. And you did mention sort of men and postnatal depression, which again, a lot of women probably wouldn't think that dads are going through that. And they probably think that it's only them that can go through it because they're the one who carried the baby. They're the one who's feeling everything. But if we could just talk about how important it is that men do go through that and what they're feeling, just so that the mothers to be mothers can understand how, what the men are going through as well. Because I think that's so important to know that it is possible for men to suffer from PTSD and all sorts of different depressions.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we talk about often in the groups that we run with Dan is mum's mental health, because a lot of men are concerned about it. You see it on the news, you see it in documents, you see it in resources you get from the hospital, and dads are concerned that their partners are going to have depressive episodes or postnatal depression or anxiety or whatever it might be. And the statistics are quite high, you know. I think it's something like 1 in 5 women with postnatal depression. And we use that to speak to dads about their own mental health, because they're concerned about their partner, but they haven't thought about themselves. And so what we can do is help them to understand the signs and symptoms in the partner, why it might look a little bit different in them, because men will present in a slightly different way. Things like frustration and substance use and anger and irritation are more likely to be symptoms of that kind of postnatal depression. But we also try and dispel those myths around the kind of the hormonal aspect of postnatal illnesses. There are postnatal illnesses like postpartum psychosis that nearly are all women, but there are elements, there have been examples of men with psychosis after a baby's been born, men who have postpartum OCD as well. And so we know that it can happen, but it's much rarer. But the hormonal changes in women after they have a baby are massive. There's a huge change. And actually, the baby blues, as we will call it, happens for those first 2 weeks after a baby's born, where all of those hormones are changing and settling back down into a natural pattern. And it's actually quite normal for mums to go through baby blues. Over 50% of mums will go through that. And it's quite normal to experience that in those first 2 weeks. But after that is when we might be looking for postnatal depression if those symptoms continue. And that's when the situational element of what's happening is prevalent. Things like sleep deprivation, worries about money, responsibility over a new life, managing the rest of the family, older siblings struggling, worrying about your partner, all of those things then are impacting on your mental health. But they're all happening for dads as well. Not one of those things doesn't impact dad. And the other thing that we always highlight is that there are are some studies now that show hormones change for men when they have a baby. So when a woman when a woman's pregnant, man's testosterone levels drop during pregnancy and then when a baby's in the house. And another study that I read recently shows that when a baby cries, a man's testosterone levels drop because they need to be more attuned with the baby to support the baby. But if the baby's cries continue, testosterone levels go higher than they were before, which actually can be quite frustrating for dads. They can become quite irritable because they become on edge, because testosterone levels going high is like a safety response for evolution for men. So we're looking for how we can support the family, and maybe there's a threat to the family, and that's why it goes higher. So we need dads to understand that being frustrated with a baby that has a prolonged cry is normal, and it's okay to put them down. It's okay to walk away and calm and then go back and respond, and it's the responding to the baby that's important. So if we can understand that all of this stuff that happens isn't in isolation, it's a family unit. Everybody is struggling with things that are happening, and everybody has their own limits. And just because you're not affected by one thing doesn't mean your partner won't be either, and vice versa. If you're really struggling with something, your partner might be okay, and you need to be able to communicate that and work it out between you. And there is support for both partners for anything that they're kind of experiencing, and accessing the support is really important for the baby, because mental health issues are a big barrier to that attachment we were talking about earlier on.
Absolutely. And you know what you were saying about support, there's so much more support out there now than there was 5 years ago, definitely 10 years ago. So how do they get that support? Because sometimes you've got the whole masculinity thing, like, I don't need support, I'm all right sort of thing. How do you get past that thinking that, well, actually you might show this face on the outside, but in the inside you are struggling, but you still think it's not a manly thing to do to reach out to that support? How can we pass that barrier there?
I think for me, this is from my experience in the work that we do, most men that are struggling aren't hiding it from anyone. They've just not acknowledged it for themselves yet. And that's a massive thing. They put it in a box and put it away and then carry on with all the practical stuff that they really are really good at doing. And so it might be really difficult to notice that a man's struggling because he's still getting up and going to work. He's still doing the pots. He's still supporting his partner. He's doing all that stuff. And the struggles then are left in a box and build up until there's a crisis. And that's when men tend to approach people for support. And that tends to be further on down the line. It tends to be a GP, or it tends to be peer support. Somewhere like Andy's Man Club are a great example. The way that they reach men is magnificent in terms of they offer the platform for men to speak. And it's a great place to go once the man has realized that he needs to speak. What we try and do at Dad Matters is share the stories of dads who have had similar experiences so that men can acknowledge what they're going through. And the reason that I spoke about my experiences earlier on is because there are men that are going through that have not acknowledged it in the way that I didn't, that might do now that they've heard me, and they might think, yeah, I'm going to go and speak to somebody about this. And so helping dads to acknowledge that there's an issue is the first part that we need to get right. And the second part is we need to know the correct pathways, because there's organizations out there that are amazing for dads. There's campaigners and advocates that are sharing stories. There are services like us, Dads in Mind. There are other peer support services like Leeds Dads and Dads Rock, and there's resources out there like Dad Pad and Dad Info and Dad Natal app, and Best Beginnings Baby Buddy app. I can't highlight that enough. It's an amazing tool. And there's direct services like Health Visitors, who absolutely will work with dads, and you just need to speak to them. There's perinatal services. A lot of places now in the adult mental health pathways have priority access for perinatal parents, so that includes dads in a lot of cases, so it's worth finding that out. Organizations like Mind have lots of programs for men and for dads that you can access and just go and speak. And what we find is most of the dads that speak to us don't need extra intervention after that. Speaking is the first and sometimes the only thing that they need to do, but it's the one thing that they're going to put off because they've not acknowledged it yet. Being able to offer those kind of signposts into those services is a great way to do it. But there's organizations out there that aren't appropriate for dads that are struggling with mental health. They're meant for those dads that are okay, that want to go to the pub on a Saturday night, or want to go and have a kickabout, or and really want to meet with other dads and have that social interaction. But it isn't, they don't have those safeguarding pathways. They don't have those duty of care pathways. And so knowing those differences, and if you're running an organization, how do you thread those safeguarding and duty of care messages into what you're offering is important, because this is a very new area for dads, and we need to get it right soon, and not let dads slip through the net and end up being having a negative experience in some organizations and then not attending the other ones that could really support them and sometimes save a life.
Absolutely. I'm loving all that. So just to wrap it up then, Kieran, what what would be the three top things that you would give to the dads out there, or even the mums as well, actually? What would be your three top advice?
Top three. So the first one is, you can't spoil a baby. Pick them up as often as you want. Have skin to skin with them. Kiss them, touch them, tickle them, stroke them, smell the head. Oh, babies' heads smell amazing. And it's for a reason. It's because we need to do it. They need us to do it. Just do it as often as you can.
I know, right?
When you're thinking about how babies interact with us, don't think about what you need them to do. Think about what they need from you. Because babies don't have a timeline in terms of when they sleep or anything like that. They don't have the hormones that regulate nighttime and daytime yet. So when they tell you, when they cry, when they move, when they put a hand in the air, when they hiccup, all of that is communication. They're telling you something. And getting to know them, spending time watching them, spending time trying to think about what they're thinking and feeling really helps you to build that relationship with them. And that, in the future, will pay dividends for your relationship with your kid. So that's the second one, is get to know them as much as you can. And then thirdly, you don't have to be perfect. The research shows us, scientifically, we only need to respond to our baby's cues 60%-ish of the time. And we can miss the rest, and your baby will be resilient and will be absolutely the way that they need to develop will still happen. What we need to try and do is get percent. And the biggest barrier to that is your mental health. So you don't need to be perfect, but you do need to be looking after yourself.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Kieran. Oh my goodness. I don't know about anybody else, but I learned loads in that just half an hour session. So where can people get hold of you, Kieran?
The best thing to do is find us on social media. We've got Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Insta, and TikTok. Please don't judge the TikTok videos. Most of them I've done just to wind my kids up because they don't like the fact I'm on TikTok. But it's Dad Matters UK, DadMatters, on all platforms. We also have a website, dadmatters.org.uk. And if you don't have Dad Matters delivering direct work in your area, contact your local Home Start and ask them about Dad Matters. And if they want to contact us, talk about how they can bring Dad Matters to their area, then we can talk to them about that as well.
Lovely. Thank you ever so much, Kieran. And I'll drop those links down below so people can access you. And I'm loving what you're doing. I'm loving what you're doing out there, being an advocate for other dads and families. So well done you. Absolutely.
Thanks, Sandra. No worries. It's been a pleasure.
Excellent. And I'll speak to you soon.
Ciao.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much again, Kieran, for coming on the show. So I'm loving the fact that you managed to unveil so much of your personal story. That was really kind to share that story with the listeners. And also, I like the way you were speaking about attachment, you know, how important it is for dads to be attached to their newborn, their child, their teenager. It sounds like you've got a really good relationship going on with your girls. And obviously that doesn't come naturally for everyone, but it doesn't mean that they can't learn. So also, you know, Kieran was talking about mums and dads' mental health. So you need to just be able to be mindful and look out for the signs when you are struggling, where to get help, how to access services that are local to you, online, reaching out to your health visitor. If your health visitor can't help, they can possibly signpost you to somewhere where you can get that additional help. So just be mindful to each other, really, and keep up the communication. That is absolutely key, communication. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, the show is bi-weekly, and leave your comments below. Rate the show. That would be great. Okay, speak to you soon, guys. Take care.